Washington Journal continues.
Nick Gillespie is editor-in-chief of Reason.com, here to talk about libertarians in campaign 2012. Let me begin with how libertarians have been represented in campaign 2012. Is Ron Paul the libertarian candidate? I ask it that way because some question whether or not all libertarians agree with him.
Yeah, he's certainly the most libertarian-minded and libertarian-leaning of the candidates who have gained traction. Earlier in the GOP Gary Johnson, a former two-term governor of New Mexico, was involved, and he also, like Ron Paul, both was identified by self-described libertarians and described himself as such, but he is likely to announce as an LP candidate after not really getting very far in the GOP process. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Ron Paul is the most libertarian candidate. Libertarians are herding cats would be a much easier task. So there's always people who are one way or the other. But I think by any estimation, he's the most libertarian.
And how do you think the media has covered libertarians in this campaign?
Ron Paul, is an interesting case because in 2008, he was seen as a sideshow. And there was that moment early on in a debate where Rudy Giuliani said, you know, how dare you suggest that American foreign policy has anything to do with people who attack us? And it was seen as this, a sign from above that Giuliani was the greatest guy ever and was about to become president. And Ron Paul was kind of a marginal kook. That was the turning point, actually, for Ron Paul's campaign as a public figure, as a major figure. He kept taking off from that, and Giuliani kept fading. And so there was a lot of discussion that Ron Paul wasn't getting as much coverage as he deserved. I think Jon Stewart on The Daily Show did a great thing, where after Ron Paul basically tied Michelle Bachmann in an Iowa straw poll, he was ignored by all of the major media, and they were talking about people like Rick Santorum and Jon Huntsman, who have yet to completely secure the votes of their own family, much less the American public. And, I think since then, Paul is being taken quite seriously. And more importantly, a lot of the libertarian issues, things about spending, things about regulation, about foreign policy, these are really getting a full airing now. For the first time, I've been working at Reason since 93, really for the first time since then.
So what do you make of the latest polls out of that state? The average out of Iowa from Real Clear Politics has Ron Paul at 22.3%, mm-hmm. but Romney's close behind at 21%, and then Gingrich, of course, fell to third at about 15%.
The first thing you can say about Gingrich, like most relatives, since it is a visiting time of the year, like fish, he starts to stink after about 3 days. And I think Gingrich's biggest problem is that the more he's around people, the more people remember why he was, why his own rebellious colleagues kicked him out of office in the late 90s. I think Romney is a pretty smooth candidate. And, he is the choice, plainly, of the Republican establishment. And I think seems to be the most presidential, a very vague term. So, I think Ron Paul is relying mostly on his message. By all accounts, he has a great operation in Iowa, so I think he'll do well. But he was doing pretty well last time around and underperformed. So, it'll be fascinating to see how this plays out.
Will Reason Magazine endorse? Have you endorsed?
No, we don't. We're published by a 501c3 nonprofit, so legally we can't endorse candidates. And if the typical group of libertarians are kind of holding each other at, at knife point and whatnot anyway, the Reason staff is even more kind of fractious. So we have a long tradition. The magazine's been around since 68, and we don't even do unsigned editorials. So, no, we won't be endorsing anybody.
What do you make of Ron Paul being a serious contender for the nomination? Jennifer Rubin wrote in the Washington Post, a Paul victory would burst Mr. Gingrich's bubble, this is in Iowa, help Mitt Romney by dividing the anti-Romney forces, and make Iowa the object of derision among many Republicans elsewhere.
It's fascinating because, when the people somebody wants are doing well in Iowa, Iowa is the very beating heart of America, and, it has its pulse on the brain of the American population, and then when somebody who you don't like seems to be doing well, Iowa is a joke and is a source of derision. And I think that's at play there. I mean, I think the broader thing is that Ron Paul, and it's not his personality. This is a guy who is not particularly charismatic. I mean, if anything, he's anti-charismatic. But his issues, I mean, questions about spending, questions about the size and scope of the federal government, including things like the Federal Reserve Bank, he is the only major party candidate who is saying, you know what, our foreign policy since the Cold War, at least, needs to be thoroughly reexamined and replayed. And he's speaking to a country that is extremely tired of a decade plus of war with a lot of things being promised forward. So, I mean, the reason why Ron Paul is doing well is because of what he's saying, not because of any other reason. And politicians, whether Democrat or Republican, ought to be thinking about that.
Critics of his, Republicans, say people are torn about whether or not he's really a libertarian. Ramesh Ponnuru writes for the San Francisco Chronicle, for Bloomberg, actually, that Paul is more culturally conservative than other libertarians. Mm-hmm. He opposes abortion, which he considers an infringement of the individual's right to be free from violence. He has supported the Defense of Marriage Act and wants to limit the jurisdiction of federal courts so they can never force state governments to recognize same-sex marriage. On issues such as these, Paul differs with his fellow libertarian, Republican Gary Johnson, the former New Mexico governor, which was one reason socially liberal libertarians were glad Johnson joined the presidential race to present another side, another side of their philosophy.
We were saying Ron Paul is not the, I'd say he's the consensus choice, it's not the unanimous choice. And, on abortion, it's also true about drug legalization. Now, Ron Paul, he makes a very clear distinction between federal government and state government or local governments. And so what he has said, and he kind of plays a little bit fast and loose with, say, the abortion issue, and I would guess, somewhere between 65 to 70% of self-described libertarians are in favor of reproductive choice, including abortion for women. Ron Paul is not, but he also says that it should not be decided at the federal level. So most libertarians can live with that.
And do you think that, where is his support coming from? Are there that many libertarians in Iowa?
There are, according to national polls, including Reason Magazine now does one with a group called the Roop Foundation, there's like 10 to 14% of the population can be reliably called libertarian. They tend to favor what Reason Magazine talks about as free minds and free markets, civil liberties and social tolerance, plus fiscal conservatism. So they're out there, but again, Ron Paul is saying, look, we are in a bad situation because the government is borrowing 40 cents on every dollar it's spending, and this has not stopped since George Bush was in office or Barack Obama. We're waging wars in places that we shouldn't be and that are not popular. We're bailing out big companies, but we're not doing things, to help the economy take off. We have, we have a failed war on drugs. He's the only one who's talking about how federal prohibition has been a complete disaster at every level for individuals, as well as for minorities, as well as for law enforcement. So that's what's resonating. We have a reporter, a staffer, Brian Doherty, who has a biography of Ron Paul coming out in May. In 2008, he went on tour with him around during the presidential season. And one of the things that he found, and this seems to be true as well, is that Paul energizes people who have been following him for years, as well as conservative Republicans who are fed up with small government rhetoric but big government action, and Democrats and liberals who thought that somebody like Barack Obama was going to challenge the drug laws, was going to be good on civil liberties. He's worse than George Bush, if possible. On a whole host of things, Ron Paul is bringing out a whole new generation of people who are excited by the idea of, like, okay, you know what, the country really can thrive under a smaller government where individuals have more scope to make choices that matter to them. So a lot of it is new people. That's what we found in 2008, and I think that's following through.
Let's get to phone calls here.
Sure.
Democratic line, Lellis in Clarkvich, North Carolina. Go ahead.
Good morning. How you doing?
Morning.
Hi. I just have a comment. I'm really concerned about all the things that people are saying about President Obama. He will never be able to win anyhow because of people like the Speaker of the House. They're going to fight him no matter what he try to do for the people. Also, we have to look at the underlying factor why the United States is in the trouble that it's in. Who owns all the large banks that's getting the bailouts? Who is responsible for the drugs coming into the United States.
Who are you suggesting is? Who owns that?
Excuse me. Why haven't the United States progressed? We have only had one African-American president. And anything that he does, you can see Boehner on television, our Speaker of the House.
All right, we got your point. Caller, let me ask a question since those were just comments. Mm-hmm. How does a libertarian like Ron Paul beat President Barack Obama if he were to get the nomination?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a political strategist, and I am a small L libertarian. I somewhat proudly, somewhat ashamedly can say I've voted for one major party candidate for president in my entire life, and that person was Walter Mondale, which gives you some sense of both how old I am and how stupid I am. And that was the last vote I wasted on a major party candidate. So I don't know. You know, can Ron Paul win the Republican nomination? Can he win the presidency? Yeah, why not? I mean, you know, if anybody thinks, I mean, one of the things that I always find amazing is the way that somebody like Newt Gingrich or John Huntsman was somehow anointed by, you know, the cognoscenti as, okay, this is a believable candidate, whereas Ron Paul or Gary Johnson, just simply not credible. People said Barack Obama had no chance against Hillary Clinton, who was arguably as seasoned a candidate and as experienced a candidate as could possibly be created, and he ended up beating her. So I think he could. The question with somebody like Ron Paul, and, you know, this is what is fascinating, is can he move from, libertarians have often been seen as a kind of conscience of the government, particularly the federal government, spend less, invade less, restrict people's liberty to, you know, live however they want less. Can he make a shift into actually saying, no, this is not a tendency, this is the direction we should be going in? I think that remains to be seen, because we have not even as a country fully kind of, you know, we're starting the conversation about the kind of debt that we're in at the federal, at the state, and at the local level. We're probably decades away from fully embracing the fact that we have been on an unsustainable course, every bit as unsustainable as Europe, which is 20 or 25 years ahead of us in terms of where this ends. So, I don't know.
John's a Democrat in Beachright, Miami. Go ahead. Or Michigan, excuse me.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, Nick. I really enjoy your views on the drug war. Thanks. I had a quick question on economics. Do you think there's a contradiction within capitalism when you have ownership over the means of production through a private property rights doctrine? And then do you think that conflicts with the idea of democracy? Thank you.
Yeah, and now I'm curious if that was a Democratic line or that's a...
That was a Democratic line.
No, I'm joking, because it's kind of a Marxist analysis, which I don't say to impugn it, I say to describe it. No, I don't think that there is a contradiction in terms, especially if the role of the government is limited. The things that people are very upset about, and which arguably have had a really negative effect on the economy, it's not that people vote in one realm and then they vote with their dollars in others, but rather that the government takes people's tax money to bail out or to privilege certain companies, whether through trade policy, whether through actual protectionism, or bailouts and things like that. And that's, you know, one of the things that is fascinating is that when you go back and look at TARP, which was pushed by a Republican president, Secretary of Treasury, and then pushed by George Bush in a big way, that was the moment that created the Tea Party. It wasn't about Barack Obama. And that was coming after many years of bad economic choices where the Republicans reliably bailed out companies or helped companies that they thought were doing the public's work. And that, you know, so this is really the nexus. And I think a tougher question for libertarians and for people more generally is just that, is there a system under which businesses finally don't capture the political class and use it to their own advantage, often at odds with what individual taxpayers or citizens or business owners would like?
Let's go next to Romero, Republican in Dayville, North Carolina. Morning.
Good morning. I was just turning through the channels, and I saw your show for a second. I'm not a real fan of C-SPAN, but, well, I just saw it. I just happened to wake up really early, drink my coffee, got to get to work. But there's only one thing that hits my mind, and it just blows my mind away. I used to be a Democrat. I used to go for Barack Obama. But then I realized, where are we going now as a country? Why can't we just, like, break all the barriers and say, Let's go. Economy. Just let it run. Let the leaders be the leaders. There's people that are going to be followers. Let them be followers. I don't know. Am I wrong? Am I wrong to say that? Maybe you could, I don't know, enlighten me.
Well, hold on. Romero, hold one second. Are you following?
I'm not following. Maybe I'm a leader, but I'm not following.
Romero, what do you mean by your comments? Can you explain them a little bit more?
Okay.
What do you mean, let leaders be leaders?
This. I'm not voting on 2012. All I know is that next election, when they have real leaders, I'll probably vote because I'm not satisfied with anybody.
All right. All right. Those are Romero's comments and Dave on North
Carolina. Yeah, well, that, I mean, I think that there's a huge amount of dissatisfaction with, you know, both Barack Obama. I mean, we can look at the disapproval ratings or the approval ratings, even among Democrats. He's not the most popular guy in town anymore. And among the Republicans, there seems to be a broad-based level of dissatisfaction with the available candidate. So, you know, in that sense, I think he's tapping into something that's very widespread. What's interesting is what are the things that take, that would replace that? And this is where I do think somebody like Ron Paul is fascinating, and Gary Johnson in his own way, which is that they were not saying, I'm a messiah, I'm going to lead you to the promised land. Rather, Ron Paul's appeal is very much, his stump speech is, I don't want to run the economy because in a free society, individuals do that. I don't want to run your life because we have different values, and I don't want to run the world because I don't know enough about it. And it's actually, I think, in ways, could be the beginning of a transformational relationship of people to government, where we don't look for people who are great orators or great speakers or who say, I've got a 12-point plan, you know, a Newt Gingrich model of, like, I'm the so smart, you know, hopefully you'll understand 5% of what I'm doing. And instead, it's like, no, you are adult, I'm an adult, I'm going to help create a stable framework of regulations and rules, and then let's see how things go.
When Ron Paul was running in 2008, he was on the Washington Journal. A caller had called up, and several callers had called up and said, I'm praying for you, I'm praying for you. After the call, I'd asked him, how does that make you feel when people are saying that for you, that this enthusiasm for you? He said, it makes me nervous.
Yeah.
I said, but you're running for president. He said, I know, but I can't fix all their problems.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is like I said, I mean, this could be transformational to a point where, you know, in every other part of our lives, and this is, you know, let me plug the book that I wrote recently with my colleague Matt Welch, The Declaration of Independence, ENTS, How Libertarian Politics Can Fix What's Wrong with America. But our starting point is that everywhere else in our lives, whether, you know, in our commercial lives, in our personal lives, in our social lives, our work lives, we're taking more responsibility for what matters to us and how to attain it. It's time that we try that with politics, because we have seen what happens when you have larger and larger apparatuses trying to control every leads. And it leads to one chief executive after another saying, hey, I demand and I have the right to imprison American citizens, whether you care about it or not. You know, this is, it's a bad place, and we need to back up off of that dead end and go down a different road.
Let me bounce this tweet off of you. It's from Mike Freeman, and he says, the old-fashioned liberal, in quotes, actually believes in most libertarian ideals, except with a belief in societal responsibility.
And the only thing I would say about that is that it's, libertarians believe in responsibility as well. Paul actually told a group of college students, not a particularly tough crowd to begin with in Iowa, he said, you know, you should have every right to smoke and drink and eat whatever you want, but then you don't have a right to come and complain, you know, and bum off your neighbor or the government when you have screwed up. So that I think at the very nexus of the libertarian identity is that you should have more control over your life, but you also have more responsibility.
Mike, an independent in Safety Harbor, Florida. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, C-SPAN. Good morning, Mr. Gillespie. Mm-hmm. Just a few questions on Dr. Paul. The reason why he's getting such airtime now, if you will, is his pragmatism, I believe. I am a lifelong Democrat that, while I haven't officially done it, I'm abandoning my party. I voted for Gore, obviously Kerry, of course, Obama, and certainly will never again vote for either major party candidate except for someone like a Ron Paul, possibly a Gary Johnson, maybe a Buddy Romer.
all the people that aren't getting really any press, and now the fact that Ron Paul is actually going to win in Iowa, it's almost an embarrassment that they're now downplaying the whole caucus and saying it doesn't matter. What you have is a media blackout. Now, they've always had no problem reporting on Ron Paul when he was your crazy uncle, but when he actually has a chance to reform and make some changes that we all need and we all agree need to be made, now he's the laughingstock. But I can tell all of the voters out there, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I drank the Kool-Aid for years. I am going to vote for your Republican candidate if it is Ron Paul. So please believe the man is definitely electable.
Hey, Mike,
thank you very much.
For the ticket out of Iowa, here is the New York Post. The Libertarian Lion must rely on his top-notch organization and enthusiastic supporters to dominate the caucus. A victory would make him a top-tier contender going into New Hampshire, which holds its primary contest on January 10th.
Right. No, that's true. And, the one thing I wanted to comment on what the caller had said was that, he likes Ron Paul because he's a pragmatist. This is, something. Ron Paul hasn't changed. He's essentially articulating the same vision of politics that he always has in policy. But it's a very different world where instead of being a crazy dreamer who's like a utopian visionary, now he's the pragmatist in the race. And there's a lot of truth to that because the spending patterns that the Republican Party and the Democratic Party have signed on to in the form of Barack Obama's budget plan or Paul Ryan's budget plan, they would take us from spending about $3.7 trillion a year now in 10 years to be spending $5.7 trillion or $4.7 trillion, Democrat versus Republican. And we've already almost doubled spending over the past decade. I mean, the establishment are the ones who are living in cloud cuckoo land. And a guy who's saying we need to cut $1 trillion from the budget next year is the pragmatist. That's kind of interesting.
Well, given that shift, do you think it's been do you think it would be a mistake for Ron Paul to do what he has done in the past when he's run for president, and that is swear off a third-party bid?
He's, I guess, been cagey about that because from what I understand, and again, my sources are probably less good than anybody listening to this show's, but that, he's retiring. He's 76 years old, and he said that he's not going to run for re-election to Congress. And he's very interested in influencing the Republican platform. He has said, despite running as a Libertarian Party candidate for president in 88, he is a Republican, and he wants to influence that party. So, I don't think a third-party bid is in the cards for him, but you never know.
Nick Gillespie is our guest, editor-in-chief of Reason.com, and here is a tweet for you from Mary Citizens who says, even libertarian, quote, less government is just switching from big constitutional government to bigger privatized market governed by corporate contractors.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that. The real question I think involved in all of these, I mean, it's an interesting issue, but what's the role of government and what are the necessary functions that it has to do? And, does the government to take an example that Harry Reid defended against not even actual cuts in spending, but reductions and increase of spending, should the federal government be funding cowboy poetry reading? I have a PhD in English. I love literature. That is not maybe if we were so flush with cash, we didn't know what to do. Maybe then, cowboy poetry would make sense. In any world that is imaginable, it does not. The question is, do you get to choose among options for governance? You want your garbage to be picked up. Does that mean that you need to live in a municipality that funds that fully and has people in the public sector on payroll, on health benefits, on retirement plans, or do you have contractors bid for your garbage and you pay them better rates for better service? That doesn't strike me as some kind of authoritarian nightmare.
Here's Gregory, a Democrat in Manhattan. Morning.
America, good morning to the world, since we're all connected. Hopefully I'll get a chance to finish what I have to say before Greta decides to cut me off.
Well, Gregory, if you can make it quick and concise,
well,
go ahead.
It's going to be as quick as it needs to be, Greta, because I am a citizen just like you. And here it goes, okay? Why haven't we talked about Ron Paul and the dirty laundry that Ron Paul carries, such as the racism that seems to permeate around this man? He had to apologize recently for certain statements made in a newsletter. My second point before I get cut off is Ron Paul is always talking about less government. Meanwhile, he's been in government for over 20 years. And thirdly and lastly, President Barack Obama will be the president again after 2012, period. And the idea that you guys believe that there is no support for this man who is our president, you guys are looking through the wrong lens. There's a bigger reality out there, and it's not Ron Paul.
All right, Gregory, got your points in.
I think that's an interesting statement about how the political class often misses, larger stories. And I don't think anybody is predicting Ron Paul's immediate appeal or how he's doing in national polls. He's still around 10% as opposed to specific states. To go to the real question that I think the caller was making or statement, and I think it's worth talking about, are the Ron Paul newsletters, which are everywhere in the news. Reason.com has been covering them really going back to 2008 when it became evident to us that they existed. For years, up through about 1992 or so, Paul had a bunch of newsletters that were published under his name. They were not byline. They seemed to be written by him. Most sources close to him say he did not actually write them. But they do contain a lot of racially horrible material. I mean, things that are not, that are not good by any stretch. And he does need to explain how that came about and how, whether or not most people around him, and if you look at his legislative history, he is not a racist, he's not a homophobe, he's not any of the things that have been imputed to him, and that came up in the newsletters in various, dark and disturbing ways. But he needs to explain, I think, fully for his candidacy to go forward, how did this happen, and how does it or does it not reflect on his ability to manage a White House? And again, at Reason.com, we've got, I think, right now, four of our five most popular stories over the past week address this issue, and there's a lot of dissension, and maybe not dissension isn't the right word, a lot of discussion and troubling elements coming out about that within the libertarian community and then within the broader kind of Republican community as well as the polity at large.
What did you make of the way he handled it this time around? He's been asked about it every time he runs, but this time around, saying he wasn't quite familiar with the content, and then people going into our archives on C-SPAN.org and finding him talking in specificity about what was in those newsletters back in 1995.
Yeah, there's, he has told, and this is something that we documented as well as the identity of the likely ghostwriters of these columns and whatnot. There's an article in our archives if you type in who really wrote or who wrote Ron Paul's newsletters from 2008. I think it's, there's two ways to think about it. And one is that the newsletter material is bad. There's no, there's no discussion of that, I think. But his handling of it from a strategic point of view, it seems to me he really needs to do a better job of explaining why his stories have kind of changed over time to a certain degree and how this fits into where he is now. And one of the things, and one of our, a number of our staffers, including myself, I mean, the important thing on a certain level is not to wish this away or ignore it, but rather to recognize that his appeal right now are these things that I've been talking about, where it's, he's the only person, he offers an actual alternative to Republican and Democratic politics as usual. He's talking about actually cutting spending from this year to next year, not reducing the amount of increase. He's talking about a different vision of foreign policy. He's talking about auditing the Fed. He's talking about really creating a sphere of personal liberty and freedom in terms of drug legalization, in terms of alternative lifestyles, that nobody else is talking about. And that's his appeal, that he's an alternative to a Democratic and Republican status quo that has really, for the entire 21st century, has just driven us into a ditch.
We were just showing, as you were talking, Reason.com's website and that story, who wrote Ron Paul's newsletters, for those that are interested. Here's Donna816 on Twitter, who says, if Paul wins, will become a dictator. If not, how will he break the gridlock to pass any of this?
There's a huge body of academic literature on public interest and public choice politics, special interest politics, and if he wins, I think he'll be like Bill Buckley when he was running for mayor of New York in the 60s, and he was asked, what would be your first action? And he would say, I would demand a recount. You know, if Ron Paul wins, that will, let's put it this way, if Ron Paul wins, the world will have changed where virtually anything is possible and unicorns will be, you know, feeding out of our hands at petting zoos. So let's deal with that question when we have to.
Richie is an independent in Melbourne, Massachusetts. Go ahead.
Good morning. I think Ron Paul is the best of all the candidates for the Republican side, but if I had beaten Obama, he's not going to do it because he's a gimme president. And this country has totally depended on government, and it's getting more bigger and bigger by the years. And it's a sad, sad situation when people can't, you know, work and make their own living. No matter if you have to work two or three jobs, as I do all my life, and I'm 67 years old, and I still go to work today at 12 at noon. But I worked all my life. And as long as we got these people that think the government should take care of them, we're not going to beat Obama. And one more thing, Greta. Every time I listen to this C-SPAN, there isn't a segment that don't go by that there is a black person that's always calling us white people racist. And I think when they start on that, just cut them off because I'm not a racist. I'm a true American, and I work for everything I got.
Okay. We'll leave it there, Richie.
If I can say, you know, one of the things that's fascinating, and people like Ron Paul and certainly libertarians more broadly bring this up, that the major transfers from the government to individuals in America, it's not going to poor people, it's going to generally wealthy and middle class and upper middle class older Americans through Social Security and Medicare. And these are the programs that are fundamentally unsustainable in their current form, particularly Medicare, and becoming more and more understood as really as immoral, where what we do through payroll taxes and particularly with Medicare is we take from relatively young people and poor people and give it to old people who are relatively wealthy and well off. And one of the things that Paul talks about, and I think other people are starting to do this, is to say to older Americans, do you want to be part of a generation that is taking the opportunities of your children and grandchildren by immiserating them during their youth to pay for your retirement, your health care that you can afford? And that's actually the biggest shift that has to happen, which is that we have to get back to a model where you build up resources and assets through the course of your life, and then as you get older, you filter that back down to the young rather than making the young from the first day of work and from the first dollar of work putting into systems that are not going to be around in recognizable form when they retire.
Melvin, a Republican in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to make a few brief comments and to touch off of the last caller about the racist comments that blacks make on C-SPAN. But I want to say that, in my opinion, that I've always felt like the libertarian position has always been somewhat anarchist. And I wanted to make clarity with Mr. Gillespie, or I wanted to find out his insight as to whether or not that's a true statement, or are libertarians really for limited government? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in my experience, most libertarians are not anarchists. There are, you know, libertarian, I like to use it as an adjective rather than as a noun, and so there are libertarian anarchists. People like Noam Chomsky calls himself a libertarian socialist. People like Ron Paul calls himself a libertarian Republican, you know, so it works better as an adjective. And I think the way to think about it is, in any given situation, do you want to give people more choices or options to make decisions? Do you want to broaden the size and scope of human action? Most libertarians are not anarchists. They do believe in a kind of written constitution. And, you know, what they want is a government that is far more limited and predictable than what we've had. There's a lot of talk in libertarian circles, and this bleeds over into the regular discussions now, of what is called regime uncertainty. We typically talk about this in developing nations where, you know, investors and people don't want to move to countries where they're not sure from day to day if a government is going to topple or there's going to be a civil war. We have introduced massive amounts of regime uncertainty in the 21st century in America, where we don't know from year to year what the budget is. We haven't passed the budget in years. We don't know what the regulations are going to be. We're looking at whether you're for or against health care reform in 2014. That's when we're going to start finding out exactly how much this stuff costs. So if you're an employer or an employee shopping for insurance, you're totally uncertain. You can't plan ahead. And that You know, so libertarians are in favor of regime certainty, and the best way of achieving that is by having a small, limited, clearly understood government.
Lauren, a Democrat in Milton, West Virginia, you're on the air with Nick Gillespie of Reason Magazine.
Hello. I feel like it's their libertarians aren't getting enough credit. Now, I am a very liberal Democrat who's personally conservative, but I think people want change, and with Barack Obama, and I probably will be voting for Barack Obama. My problem is the lobbyists, the Congress. You talked about the health care law. Well, the health care took forever to get passed. The Barack Obama had a meeting with the drug companies, insurance companies, you know, these things behind closed doors. The Republicans were, again, you know, gave their input, changed a lot of it, and then none of them voted for it. The thing is change. We want change. And I could see myself voting for a Ron Paul. So I never thought about what you'd said, Ron Chomsky, being a, well, whatever the term was that you used, libertarian socialist. It's change, making that limited. So that's my point.
You know, it's funny when the, and to bring it back to my book, which I would like to, the Declaration of Independence, which I think is probably the most fascinating book written in the past 6 months or so. But, you know, one of the things I was thinking out in the green room, you had an assortment of Pop-Tarts out there. And in the book, we talk about how there's something like 36 brands of Pop-Tarts when they were introduced in the mid-60s by Kellogg's. There were three types. Three flavors that all looked exactly the same. Now there's this proliferation of colors and shapes and, you know, little things stuck on them. They're like miniature works of art. And as the caller was saying, look, I'm a liberal Democrat who's personally very conservative, and I'm thinking about voting for Ron Paul. This is the moment we live in where in all aspects of our lives, we expect and demand hyper-individualized and personalized service. We know that categories like black, white, right, left, liberal, conservative, don't capture what we are. We're much more complicated and, you know, let's pat ourselves on the back and say more nuanced and sophisticated. And we need a politics that represents that. And I do think this is part of the problem is that Barack Obama is not the change agent that people thought. He's actually a very old line Democrat. And, you know, on the other side, somebody like Mitt Romney, one of the reasons why he fails to engage people on a visceral level is that he could be George Romney, his father, in 1968. There's just not a lot of engagement or personalization or individualization in the candidates or the politics that they espouse.
And we do offer more than Pop-Tarts in our green room.
That's no. Although I do want to, for the big, you know, you seem to be in bed with the big carb lobby.
All right, Dale is a Republican in Florida. Go ahead, Dale.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. And also, happy holidays to everyone.
And same to you, Dale.
Well, also, I'd like to say that there are a lot of good leaders today running for office, all of them very capable. I like a lot of everyone's strategies, especially Ron Paul's, where there's less government intrusion, more freedoms. Now, if we look at everybody out in the streets protesting, I believe that's because of some financial oppressions and possibly some other things. But I think that our answer is obvious before us, the economy, and, you know, we're trying to recover from the war. And I think we'll make it. I don't think anybody's going to get in office and be some dictator kind of thing. I don't think that's possible in America.
All right, Dale. About his comments about Occupy Wall Street, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Interesting. What's your take on that?
You know, I think Occupy Wall Street is best understood in conjunction with the Tea Party, and it's kind of fascinating. The Tea Party has vastly bigger numbers and also vastly more negative news coverage, and it's fascinating just to think about how there were constantly reports of real and implied violence at Tea Party movements where, you know, hundreds of thousands of people were marching around. There were no acts of violence, and then in the Occupy Wall Street, a much more popular media coverage, and yet there was actual violence among people. But they are both, they need to be taken seriously as, you know, rare and unique and meaningful public expressions of kind of outrage, certain sense of impotence, as well as a demand to reclaim some measure of control over their lives. And the one thing about Occupy Wall Street, which is fascinating, is that, you know, the only politician whose name was mentioned at those things, if you look at the signs, with any positivity was Ron Paul. I mean, he is an interesting bird just for his ability to kind of cover the waterfront in terms of where he's drawing support from, including going back to the newsletter issue, some pretty unsavory characters.
Occupy Des Moines is having their caucus today in the state. And one of the organizers, Ed Fallon, is going to be on our show. Washington Journal will be live there tomorrow. So ask him about his support for Ron Paul or the group's support for Ron Paul. We can gauge that then. By the way, also joining us from Des Moines tomorrow at 7:45 a.m. Eastern Time will be Bob Van de Platts, the president and CEO of the Family Leader Christian Conservative, designed that so-called marriage pledge that Newt Gingrich recently signed. Also in Iowa, this is the Washington Post today. Romney will touch down in the Hawkeye State today after noon to deliver a speech in Davenport. He will then embark on a three-day bus tour through communities where he performed well in the 2008 caucuses. Romney also will employ a series of surrogates, including New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and Senator John Thune, to help blanket the state. Rick Perry and Representative Michelle Bachmann, who promised to hit all 99 counties in the final weeks, will lead their own bus tours today. A couple more phone calls here for Reason.com editor-in-chief Nick Gillespie. John, an independent in West City, Georgia. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm a veteran, spent 26 and a half years in the military. I fought for freedom. You tell me, why should I vote for Ron Paul? He's a bigot. He don't like Jews. He don't like blacks. And he definitely don't like gays. I'll hang up and listen at your comment. Thank you.
Well, you know, it's interesting that the caller talks about being a veteran. Ron Paul, in 2008 and again so far in 2012, has massively led all the candidates, including Barack Obama and the Republican would-bes, among donations from active military people. He's actually collected more than all of the Republicans combined together, and about twice as much as Barack Obama in 2012 race so far. So he's actually, you know, the Pentagon and the military-industrial complex, lobbyists, things like that, hate his guts. But he's the actual guys and women patrolling the shores and firing the guns and stuff seem to really dig him. Going back to the question about being a bigot and whatnot, again, you know, he needs to explain the newsletters and the contents of those. I don't think that's why he's popular now. And people around him testify that he is not a bigot. He's also not anti-Semitic. He has been a critic of all foreign aid, including aid to Israel. And he has at various points said that the U.S., has a bad deal with Israel for both countries. We give them a lot of money. We also tie their hands in ways that they might prefer not to be. These are legitimate issues that need to be thought about. And his foreign policy is probably the thing that more than anything bugs establishment or conventional Republicans, because he is talking about a radical shift in American foreign policy and defense spending. And one of the things that's fascinating is that when you look at the Paul Ryan budget that the GOP passed in the House, and you look at Barack Obama's budget plan that he released earlier this year, over the next decade, Barack Obama actually increases defense and homeland security spending a lot more than the Republicans, who jack it up a little bit. And that's all coming on a doubling of Pentagon spending since 2000. But it's, you know, these are issues where we know the Republicans are hawks and the Democrats are, you know, kind of like soft in the clinches things. That's actually not true in terms of how much money they want to spend on what they call defense or homeland security.
As we close out here, we talked a lot about Iowa, but I want to show our viewers a Boston Globe poll. Out of New Hampshire, it shows Mitt Romney leading that state 39%, but Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul are tied at 17%. Yeah. What do we know about his organizational effort in that state?
He has a strong pull in New Hampshire because he is a limited government, to the extent that there still exists a kind of libertarian sensibility in New Hampshire. Romney, obviously, it's his backyard. He's owned it for a long time. A couple of newspapers in New Hampshire, which don't have a strong record of picking the winner anyway, went with Gingrich a while ago. I think we can safely say, and I guess hopefully this will at some point show up on a blooper reel, Gingrich is finished. He reached a high water mark, and then again, I think people remember. He's like a bad breakup where you're like, you know, it's New Year's Eve is coming up. You're like, maybe I should get back together with them, and then in 5 minutes you realize you made a horrible mistake. I think if Ron Paul does well in Iowa, His numbers will go up in New Hampshire. And then it becomes an interesting question after that. He's not polling as well in South Carolina as some of the other candidates. But then you look down the road and people like, you know, Rick Perry and Newt Gingrich did not even qualify for the Virginia ballot. And it shows a real lack of organization on their part, whereas Paul and Romney have been doing this for a while and they know what they're doing. So I think what you'll see is a real interesting, you know, kind of discussion about what's the direction of the Republican Party and by extension, a larger sense of where America should be going. You know, we've got almost 90 years left of the 21st century. You know, I think we can all agree it's been kind of a bust politically so far. I mean, we have nice gadgets. You know, we've got the iPad and we've got tablets and all that kind of stuff. We've got a lot of different types of Pop-Tarts, but we need to get our politics in order. And, you know, this is why I think the Republican race will be interesting, because that is where that debate is happening with Ron Paul on the one side and then people like Romney or Gingrich or the others on the other side. And depending on how that plays out and how it influences the general election, it could be the difference between, you know, whether we're speaking Greek in 20 years or if we're actually thriving as a nation.
Nick Gillespie, editor-in-chief of Reason.com. Thank you.
Thank you.